Grapple fans, and welcome to the latest installment of Let Me Tell You Something's March Mania, the podcast going throughout the month of, you guessed it, March. I'm your co-host, Lorcan Mullen, and with me as always is the ribe to my axle.
I'll take it, because he was more successful, but I'm not happy about it, Mr. Simon Cross.
Talk about matches from the previous 40 WrestleManias in four block chunks. A match from one of the WrestleManias from 1 to 4, 5 to 8, 9 to 12, etc, etc. Simon, we're coming to the final straight. The sprinting part of the 400 meters race. Where are we? When is it? And what match are we talking about?
We are at the Mercedes Superdome in New Orleans. We are on the date of April 6th, 2014. We are at WrestleMania 30, and we are talking about a match between Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker.
So, this is one of those times, unfortunately, we weren't able to get a guest for this episode. We have one in line, some people have lives, and just can't take the time out to talk about it. But you're talking to two men that do a podcast on a regular basis, so yeah, we've got the time. Although, do we have the energy, Simon, for this one?
Oh, fool.
The text, again, we sometimes let you in on our little WhatsApp conversations. And the text I sent Simon as I was watching this match a few hours ago was, "I'm forgetting what's happening in this match as it's happening." To which Simon replied, "I'm so glad I was drunk when I watched this the first time round." If we were just talking about this match, I doubt this episode would go on for very long. It's not even that it's bad. It's just that it's so
there,
underwhelming. And there are reasons behind that that we'll get into.
But before we do, sorry, I've been a little bit remiss. I need to set the scene of what the year 2014 was like. Just so eager to dive into the match I was, that I forgot to give you the cultural setting of 2014. So the UK number one was 5 Seconds of Summer, She Looks So Perfect. Not a great song, I'll be honest. Catchy, but not a great song.
It means nothing to me. To the best of my knowledge, I've never heard a 5 Seconds to Summer song in my life.
That means you will have, you just don't know it. The Americans have us beat on this count, because their US number one was Happy by Pharrell Williams. It's better than, you know it, at least.
I'm aware of it, yes. There was like an international, there was like a 24-hour version of that video, wasn't there? Because it was like Pharrell Williams walking down a street, and other people have been walking down various streets and they've filmed them and they were interspersing it. And there was one that was like a global version. And I remember they had like Kazuchika Okada and a couple of other New Japan wrestlers dancing to it.
Brilliant.
So I think Shinsuke Nakamura, because I don't think he was in WWE NXT at this point, was he? It would have been close to it, but
he
not
debuted,
yet.
He debuted WrestleMania 32 weekend. Yes.
Yeah, you would know that.
Right, so the Brits are 1-0 down in this cultural duel. Can we equalise? So we go to the box office. The UK box office number one at this time was Rio 2.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so in our attempts to equalise, we've put forward Rio 2. So what are the Americans going to do at the box office to try and beat us? Well, their box office number one at this time was Captain America the Winter Soldier.
This is where I get controversial. I think that's my least favourite of the three Captain America movies. That is the MCU movie where I am the most negative to the overwhelming positive feedback of that. Usually my opinions on the Marvel movies are relatively in line with people, although I don't think they're, other than maybe the first Guardians of the Galaxy and maybe Infinity War, there's never been a great movie that was a Marvel movie.
Okay.
Oh, well, maybe Black Panther, but this is the one where I was like, I just don't get it. I don't get why so many people often cite this as the best of all the Marvel films. Like, it's usually up there with those other ones I mentioned. For me, I genuinely prefer the first Avenger over the Winter Soldier. Because I prefer a World War II caper over a nondescript, claiming it's a conspiracy film, but not really, to me, doing much of a job on the conspiracy. And then it was like, I think that was also the time where I was starting to get wary of the whole just chaos and massive things blowing up all over the place at the end and like thousands of innocent people probably dying and no one seeming to care about it. You know, just those CGI splooge fests at the end just didn't do anything for me.
Civil War is much better.
Yeah, Civil War is just, it's not the best Captain America movie, I'll grant you that, but just as a movie overall, And that was kind of Marvel at its most pomp, like confident strut. And you know, they were so confident in themselves and they were so the thing that Sony literally were willing to loan them Spider-Man just to get like a taste of the brilliance of the MCU for them. And so then we also got Spider-Man, and I love Tom Hooper's... Is it Tom Hooper? Tom Holland's. So that's where we were. I mean, were you much of an MCU head at that point? Did you care? Did you go to those things?
It must have been Civil War I saw.
Or well, that's not what this is.
No. Because it's a Captain American film I watched the day I resigned from my job in a bank call center without any, like, job lined up because I just couldn't hack it anymore.
Wow. Well, this was around the time, wouldn't it, 2014, that we were either talking about or already were doing the podcast, because I put up the book in November of 2013. So this was the first WrestleMania since I'd finished Confessions of a Smart Wrestling Fan altogether. I'd done the show, I'd done the book. So I was looking for other areas to take my interest in talking about wrestling or discussing wrestling, and a podcast was always the way to go, wasn't it, Simon?
I mean, what else could two white males do?
Yeah. I mean, you were in Leicester by that point, weren't you?
Yes, I was, yeah. I've not long graduated, actually.
Yeah, because I also know that I was on the podcast for Inside the Ropes back in the day, around that time. Because I remember talking to Robert first about the book, and then going on to talk about WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
So I had Skype at that point, at least. So I think maybe at that point I was like, well, we might have started doing Let Me Tell You Something by then. I can't remember that thoroughly. The early years. Basically, everything pre-melts is a bit of a...
bit of a blur.
Blur. You know?
Yeah.
Then obviously we took a year off. Not intentionally, we just couldn't be arsed.
Yeah. Now you're stuck with us.
Yeah. Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Because no one can cancel us.
No.
So WrestleMania 30, I mean, it's such a big one as far as WrestleMania go. It's also, I think, I'm 95% sure of this. It's the last WrestleMania I saw live. I can't recall staying up to watch WrestleMania 31, 32 or anything like that. Now, when did the WWE Network come into existence?
In the UK officially or unofficially?
Unofficially.
Unofficially, thanks to VPNs.
Yeah, I'm saying I had the network from pretty much the first week it was available in certain places and not in other places. And even if I was in those other places, I was still able to get it.
Yes.
Unless I'm much mistaken, WrestleMania 30 was like one of the very first things on the network, one of the very first live events on the network.
Yeah, it was being pushed quite hard at the time.
So this was really, really significant. This was a point where it was like, as wrestling fans, we were kind of getting everything we ever dreamed of in so many ways. Like, pay-per-views at an affordable rate. Because I could not believe that they put WrestleMania in the package. I assume maybe they put every other pay-per-view on as part of the network. But I could not see how you could give away WrestleMania for just $9.99.
Network launch date was February 24th, 2014. And I think one of the reasons they did that is so they could get people to sign up on the premise of getting cheap WrestleMania and hoping that they just forgot to cancel.
Yeah. And maybe this was also the moment... Well, we were already getting there. I've always said one of the most significant events as far as getting a sense of where the crowd was now was... Well, obviously, everything post-Pipe Bomb was changing everything, and that was 2011. And then you had, I've always said, the post-WrestleMania 29 Raw.
Yeah.
That was the moment where you were really at, like, you have a very loyal fan base, but the fan base doesn't really like what you're giving them.
Yes. So sadomasochistic wrestling fans, aren't we?
Yeah. But the year before then as well, to be fair, was also when Daniel Bryan was just the most over... man in wrestling at that point with the Yes chants. Because people forget this about sometimes is that the day after WrestleMania 28, after Sheamus beat Daniel Bryan in whatever it was, 6 seconds or whatever.
Yeah. 13.
They set him up to then feud with Alberto Del Rio. And Daniel Bryan didn't even appear on the episode. He appeared on, like, the post-match dark show. But because the fans have been yesing throughout the event and then seeing briefly when Alberto Del Rio came out, it was that sense of, well, we've at least got to go for at least one more month. And that gave us the mascot of this podcast of the 2 out of 3 falls match at Extreme Rules. Which also builds into another part, the actual match that we should be getting to talking about. But everything falls into place with this. And so that coupled with NXT starting to become what we were starting to watch NXT for. And I always said it was like WWE's equivalent of The Sopranos or Orange is the New Black or whatever. Like a high caliber TV show for its more hardcore fan base to keep them on board by serving them up a product that may not have a wide audience, but it has a loyal audience. And it gives the sense of a quality within the network. So just those things. Archive of all the old pay-per-views and all the old Raws and everything. I just could not believe it. I've really never really took advantage of it the way I should have done over the years. And now it's gone for most people, and it will be gone for us in a year's time as well, won't it?
January 2025.
Yeah. I do wonder what they do with that archive, because I'm sure it depends what capacity Netflix want to give to them.
Whack it on Netflix, yeah.
Are they going to put on every Raw, every SmackDown, every NXT, every ECW, WCW, and WWE pay-per-view?
Netflix know that content is king, and they don't even have to fund this. It's been made.
Yes, but there's always the bandwidth. This is the thing people sometimes don't appreciate. It costs you money to have it be available at the click of a button.
Yeah, true.
The streaming services aren't removing all of these things that they put on there 6 weeks later just for the fun of it. They obviously have some sort of financial reason where the costs don't outweigh the revenue, they think.
Mm.
So you had Disney Plus made that Willow TV series, and it genuinely was gone from Disney Plus like 6 months later, and there's no DVD or anything of it coming out.
I didn't realize AEW were working with Disney Plus.
There we go. There we go. The world that's how through the eyes of Simon. I don't want to say it's a beautiful thing, it's scary. It's the stuff David Lynch movies are made of, but we don't need to go into that.
I'll take that for you to put a director next to my name and it be David Lynch, I'll take.
It's not because of the quality of his work, Simon.
I'm not pulling at that thread.
Have you ever seen a David Lynch film?
No.
Watch Mulholland Drive, then come back to me on that. Anyway, what it is to be a wrestling fan, a WWE fan, is in a fascinating state of flux at this time. And what WWE was as a product was fascinating at this time too. It was like giving us some of the best stuff they've ever done with some of the worst stuff they'd ever done. CM Punk had his fill with the company. No pun intended there.
Hey.
You also now had the New Japan and all that stuff that's going on as well. Was What Culture a thing by this point? I would have thought it would be.
Yes, it was.
Okay. I'm assuming that WCPW wasn't a thing by this point.
No, I don't believe so.
But you get what I'm saying. This sense of an internet community going beyond just the message boards. I guess also with the WWE's embracing of social media, Zack Ryder, all that stuff, YouTube content, and obviously Botchmania and everything like that.
Mm.
So what it was to be a wrestling fan was very swiftly changing. To the point that my book really probably does feel like it's of a very much of a different time pretty soon after it came out. I haven't gone back to reread it, so I can't comment one way or the other. And so maybe it is fitting that this match, as it is the end of a particular era. Because it is hard to pin down around this time what era we're in. I mean, some people call it the reality era. I guess that's true. But again, it's one of those netherworlds. I don't quite know what it is. It's not PG, but it's not PG. It's not John Cena-centric, but it's not John Cena-centric as well. The Rock's come back. There's starting to be some more pop cultural penetration, but not yet to the point where you're getting the big names involved. But to give you an example, one of the things I sent you as well in the build-up to this was Jon Stewart, the night after WrestleMania, yeah, taking a moment at the end of the Daily Show to complain about The Undertaker's streak being broken.
Yeah.
And the crowd very much not understanding what the hell he's talking about. I think you do that now at WrestleMania 40, if it had been an equivalent event, I think there would have been much more of an understanding of what the hell he was talking about.
God, does that lead to Jon Stewart's interference at SummerSlam?
Well, Jon Stewart, I think it was Jon Stewart had always liked wrestling, but I don't think he was a regular watcher of it, but his son was a huge fan of wrestling.
I was just mad that.
And so Jon Stewart got involved in all that a year or two later, I think specifically to impress his son. But I do think there is genuine love of wrestling there as well. Like, he still talks about wrestling sometimes in his... When he talks about politics, he'll talk about the notion of kayfabe. And we need to do something about that because, you know, Dominic Cummings wrote a whole essay on his, what are they called? Those patron things for journalists?
Substacks.
Substacks, yeah. I kind of want to use that Substack just for 1 month just to read what his version of, what his interpretation of kayfabe is. But he's not the only person that's made those observations.
Hmm.
And again, it's one of those funny things, like, I was watching a clip as well in the build-up to this of The Undertaker talking about breaking the streak, and someone says, I think this is, the guy who's hosting the show is like, I think this is the greatest streak in all of sports. And it's like, it's not a streak in sports.
Yeah.
But, maybe this, as I was saying, like, kind of how wrestling has become part of the meme culture so fully and thoroughly. And again, I can't quite put a time stamp on that, but anytime any significant event, like significant run, significant streak ends in sports, now there are the memes of The Undertaker losing the streak to Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
I mean, if, as it looks at time of recording, Bayer Leverkusen win the Bundesliga in Germany and Bayern Munich don't win it, what was it, the 11th year in a row it would have been for them if they'd have won this one?
Yeah.
There'll be, there probably already are, memes of the Undertaker streak being broken, and you've put, like, Thomas Tuchel's head over the Undertaker's, which actually is probably quite a good fit when I think about it.
Mm.
I can see Tuchel with that wankier beard.
Right. Now, that was another, again, to take you guys into our WhatsApp chat, that another text that I got from Logan. Not a fan of the beard.
The beard was reason enough for him to lose that streak. It's very 2000 new metal band.
Oh, but new metal ruled the earth for that bit. And he did like Limp Bizkit back in the day.
Yes, but this was 2014, Simon.
This is the thing with The Undertaker as a character. And we get a bit of it in this with him using Hell's Gate on a legitimate MMA star. Undertaker is a bit like wrestling's Benjamin Button. When he was young, he had to wrestle this slow, plodding style. And the world gets faster around him as he gets older. But he knows what an athlete he was back in the day. So the older he gets, the younger he feels he has to be to compete with the world around him. So that's when you start seeing him doing his dives. That's when you start seeing him adding so many elements of the MMA stuff to his game. Mainly because he's got the cachet to do it. And like, what's Vince going to do? Tell him no.
The peak years for him physically were probably 96, 97. He was starting to be more humanized as a character at that point. And he showed at least a certain amount of vulnerability, first against Diesel at WrestleMania 12, then actually losing two high-profile matches to Mick Foley. Mick Foley basically dined off for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
No one has a better record over The Undertaker than Mick Foley. He won two matches. He lost about 100, but he won two. But again, with The Undertaker, that's not a bad return.
That's a good strike rate. Yeah.
But then in 97, he actually gets to have a run as the world champion instead of the sideshow special attraction. And he has matches with Bret and Shawn. And, you know, he's able to work with them at a pace. Because Undertaker at that point would have only been like 32 or 33 himself still. That's one of the crazy things about The Undertaker, how young he was when he started doing the gimmick. And that's how he's able to get to 21-0, and that's with taking a couple of years out here and there as well on the go, because he hasn't done every WrestleMania between those. He didn't do 10, and he didn't do 2000. I think he did everyone else other than that, but this was at the point where now, like, Undertaker does his WrestleMania match and then genuinely might go away for 11 months until he has to build up to his next WrestleMania match.
Yeah, he was very much a seasonal worker at this point, wasn't he?
Yeah, which is fair enough. He earned his time there. Whereas Brock Lesnar was a very different kind of guy in that kind of schedule. But just before we get more into the minutiae of the matches and more into the wrestlers themselves, as I said, I saw this live. I assume, given that your text said that you were drunk the first time, you were watching this live as well.
Yeah, I saw this pub in Leicester, which has since been renamed, but was known at the time as the Polar Bear. And we're about to enter my apex of wrestling watching, where every month's pay-per-views were on at a pub. And I still have that group of friends who are into wrestling. Some of them have waned, some of them have gone up, branched off in different directions with wrestling, but we were all most all in, pardon the pun, on WWE at that point of between WrestleMania, I think we became friends around WrestleMania 29 onwards, to the point where a lot of us go to Dallas for WrestleMania 32. I'm in the uptick, really, at this point.
I would have been watching it live because it was one of the few times I could do it, but unlike you, I've never liked the idea of watching a WrestleMania in a pub. I don't really like going to pubs. No, actually, I do like pubs. Pubs are the few drinking establishments I enjoy. But I'm definitely much more of a going into the pub in a late afternoon, early evening environment rather than being there when everyone's around.
You like a traditional pub, I feel. Like a traditional, calmer pub.
I like a Sunday roast at a pub. That's the kind of environment I like. And so going to it for a wrestling show just held no appeal. But because I could watch it in the comfort of my own flats, that did hold an appeal. And two of my friends that I knew from work, but they weren't working with me by that point, were also interested enough in wrestling that they'll still talk to me about it. And they were both at All In as well, but just in a different part of the stadium to me. And they went to Sheffield to an Art Rev Pro show kind of semi-randomly recently. So, but I wouldn't say that, it's weird, like, I don't think they're as big, they would themselves say they're not as big wrestling fans, although I wonder if it's like they actually do the things that fans should do more than I do. I want to sit down and analyse it and talk about the history and everything and what does it say about society as a whole, whereas they just want to go to a show maybe once a year, drink a lot, cheer the goodies and boo the baddies. Like, that's not wrestling fandom. But with me, I guess I bring the tone down. So we weren't, like, jumping out of our chairs when the streak was broken. We were quite, again, because that's just not my style. And also, you know, it was 3 a.m. We didn't want to be too loud to upset any neighbours or anything like that. I don't know if my flatmate was there and asleep in his bedroom or if he maybe was with his partner by that point. We were kind of sitting there and mostly kind of analysing it, I suppose. So we were saying, this is bad booking, this is that, this is the other. We've always been very kind of, I think we're a bad influence on each other sometimes. It's like why I don't... You can tell we don't want to talk about the match. But it is more interesting to talk about the surrounding culture, like WrestleMania 30 as a period in time, and that whole time of wrestling in the WWE is fascinating. Punk goes because he can't take it anymore, but weirdly, the after effects of what he'd done and brought in this fan base, or at least made this fan base realise there's more of us than we thought there were.
Yeah.
Because like I said, when the pipe bomb happened, there were movie podcasts I listened to that just mentioned the pipe bomb. There was a news podcast, I think, where someone just mentioned this thing's crazy. And that role continued. Twitter came along as the sort of talking point around this time, and wrestling Twitter becomes a thing.
Well, yeah.
And WWE just embraces social media full force. And this was the thing. Like, there are many, 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 many things to shit on Vince for doing and hope that he doesn't enjoy you whilst you're doing it. But if there is a compliment I can make to him as a businessman, is he seemed to always want to be ahead of things or right on the cusp of things with media. He didn't necessarily understand TV production or anything like that entirely, or him and Kevin Dunn, like the best way to make the best TV product. But he got onto pay-per-view when it was the right time. He got onto closed circuit when it was the right time. He got into TV production and what the product should be, and he changed it as time went on. He got into the internet actually pretty quickly with things like Bite This and Livewire and everything and the interactive element of wrestling.
Yeah.
And he got into the streaming world way ahead of pretty much everyone else. I remember saying at the time when they did the WWE Network, I was like, what other brands could do this? Like how the WWE is the be-all end-all of this product. The time the two I said that I think could do it are Disney and HBO. And that's kind of where we've ended up, I suppose.
Sort of.
You know, like I said, there's not going to be a Paramount Plus in 2 years' time.
No. But there will still be an NFL Game Pass. There'll still be a UFC Fight Pass. There'll still... You know what I mean?
But it needs to be the strong brands. And also those things are starting to get merged all together as well. And everything... You know, obviously TKO and WWE Network going on to Netflix. It's all starting to become two or three key brands, as I
said. It's the crunch.
I didn't think it was something that could... everything's... We're going to get, by and large, the streaming service eventually. Little Wally reference for you there. I wonder again if Vince was like, this is an exciting time, this is a new time, maybe we need to do something daring.
That's okay.
And so maybe that motivated one of the reasons that he had The Undertaker lose it at this WrestleMania, because it was the first big event on the streaming service. He wants the network to be big. What's going to be bigger than everyone sharing this moment? And as we say, maybe because there were more people available to this, there was that sense of it being more of a big event. Again, I saw YouTube channels of people who didn't do wrestling, or I knew they were into wrestling, and they did a bit about them reacting to The Undertaker, the streak being over.
I remember someone I didn't know was a wrestling fan, like a couple of days after at work. So at the time, I remember slight, just complete silence in the pub.
That's what I was going to say. What was your memory of that moment?
Shock. Shock and quiet. And I actually remember going, the guy next to me, there's something wrong. This isn't right. This isn't right. Something's wrong. Then the graphic came up. They wouldn't make that. And it's very clever how they did it, because they don't play Brock's music for ages. And I look back now, and when I rewatched it, I'm like, that's genius how they did that.
That's one of those things where it's like, no, if we weren't doing the podcast by this point, I knew that I didn't want the podcast to be This Week in Wrestling because of listening to podcasts like Inside the Ropes, where there was so much good stuff on WWE TV at this point. NXT was doing good stuff. Daniel Bryan was on there. But in that moment, we were always just constantly paranoid of how is this going to be screwed up? How is Vince going to screw him over? And they knew that, and they played up to it throughout the whole of this booking of the show. And there were people on that podcast, and I was like, I know I should think this is going to happen, but I still can't believe it until I see it. And it's like, well, then they got you.
Yeah.
They've got your hook, line, and sinker. You are playing into their game. And so I never wanted to do it, because I was like, you'll sound like an idiot within 2 weeks. You can't get the time to get the proper perspective on whether anything's a good or a bad idea over time. Because my initial feeling of it was, and when we were criticizing it in the cool night time, was this was a mistake. They built up this match really poorly. If you were going to pull the trigger, it should have been more of an epic moment. And I have to say, since then, I don't agree with that, really. I do think, because you can't see the alternative version of this, I do think this was a great way to do it. And I think it's paid off for them. Because this got them 10 years of Brock Lesnar as the ultimate final boss of wrestling.
True.
And those 2 years that we had before this of Brock Lesnar returning to the Raw after WrestleMania 28. I think that's the reason why this match, when you watch it, feels quite deflating. Because Brock Lesnar going to WrestleMania 30 didn't feel like that big of a deal. He felt like another example of WWE semi-shitting the bed on what should have been a can't-miss prospect.
Yeah.
Because the month after this, we get Extreme Rules. Daniel Bryan solidifies himself as someone that can work in this environment and can carry matches. And from there, he gets to be booked against CM Punk. He's seen as an upper mid-carder from this point onwards. Whereas, we think Brock Lesnar is going to give Cena the beating of a lifetime. We all want to see them do the Big Van Vader Sting narrative, where he beats him and then John Cena has to build up to a comeback.
Yeah.
Whereas instead, we had it where Brock Lesnar beat the shit out of John Cena and then John Cena pinned him. And so we were like, you've cut off Brock Lesnar's head immediately. He will never mean as much as he meant that Raw after WrestleMania. Then the rest of the year was spent with him feuding with Triple H, and Triple H getting the win at WrestleMania 29. And on either side of that, Brock Lesnar winning the first and the third match in the series, but Triple H getting the big one.
Yeah.
And then after that, his next big appearance is SummerSlam, and he has that fantastic match with CM Punk. But similar to Kenosuke Takeshita, to Kenny Omega and Don Callis, it was like Brock Lesnar's the third most important part of this match.
Yeah.
He's just a supporting player to the story that was being told of CM Punk versus Paul Heyman. So there was that sense of they will book Brock Lesnar, but only so far, because they don't trust him, and it's punishment because he dared to walk away from them.
Yeah.
But then you get this. And then you get the SummerSlam after this where he demolishes John Cena.
Oh, God, yes.
And ever since then, for the next 9 years, Brock Lesnar was the Thanos of the WWE. He was this ultimate character that could beat anyone. And if you beat him, it meant something. Even though he lost to quite a lot of people during this whole time.
Yeah.
Every time he lost, it meant something. And it was also the start of the introduction of the very long reign as champion, but very few defenses. Mm. The Roman Reigns has carried on since then.
Yeah, and I remember at the time the discourse of people quoting like a WWE bylaw as if the champion doesn't defend within 90 days, he should be stripped of it.
Yeah.
That got floated a lot online at the time. And look, again...
Because the one thing we know about Vince McMahon is he's very insistent on consistencies in storytelling.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know.
Well, when it comes to the tag rope he did, apparently.
But we all hoped. And I think... Not hoped. We were all just a bit bitter, I think, because we had our Dolph Ziggler's, we had our Daniel Bryan's, we had our martyr, if you will, in CM Punk leave. And we just had a guy whose matches were of a certain quality, Brock Lesnar's matches. I would love at some point as part of our Match of the Week series to do Brock Lesnar in New Japan, because I've not really touched that yet. And I feel I need to.
Well, I was looking at that, and all those matches, they are all of, like, the sub-10-minute variety, I think. Yeah. He was definitely not being paid for, you know, for hard work.
Yeah.
That is true. We should... There's a few matches there. He had one against Shinsuke Nakamura that might be interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
Or he did have one with Yuji Nagata. They weirdly paired him on with Giant Bernard, which seems like a waste of everyone's time.
Mm.
But there we go. And also his last match was under the Inoki Genome Foundation, because he walked out of the promotion without putting over Tanahashi for the title. And instead, he came back and defended the third belt version of the IWGP title, because he never gave the belt back. And he lost that to Kurt Angle. So the lineage was able to come together, because Kurt Angle then... After that, do you remember that winner-takes-all match with Samoa Joe, which was for the world, the TNA World X Division tag team?
Yeah.
Might as well have thrown the Knockouts belt in there as well. And the IWGP belt was one of the ones up for grabs in that match as well. But it's funny as well with Brock Lesnar, because he was like, again, because he was given a certain amount of independence, because there's no one who really had that kind of deal that I can think of at this point. Except arguably at this point, The Undertaker, that was kind of about once a year or something.
Mm.
But that was because he earned it. Whereas with this, it was like Brock was like, if you want me, I've got certain demands. It's not like he'd put in the toil. He had worked for them for like 3 years and been the guy that they pushed to the moon. And he brought them a certain amount of interest, even though that was when the business was sort of on the decline. Not really his fault, but...
Mm. Just a hard act to follow.
Yeah, and also just when he was in the UFC, it was like, because of his time in the WWE, he was one of the biggest draws they'd ever had. And again, that carried over into the WWE. But they were merging that UFC element to him. It wasn't the Brock Lesnar of 2004, 2003 that was wrestling in these matches. This Brock Lesnar would do MMA submission holds. He comes out in shorts.
Sponsored shorts.
Yeah, before they got, was it with Reebok or Adidas? Whoever it was.
Reebok.
That made them all wear the same tight, short shorts.
Yeah.
Ooh, so I was really happy with that one. And he wore the gloves and everything. And he did do, like, all that stuff against Johnson. It was such a strange match to watch, and we still need to do that for Match of the Week at some point.
Mm.
Or if we do rerun the rivalry, Lesnar-Cena. That's also a worthy one to do.
That'd be interesting.
Probably couldn't be produced in that sense. It couldn't be... Now, Michael Hayes is going to tell you exactly how this match is
going
to come. You basically can't tell Brock to do what Brock doesn't want to do. It's sort of the way. But Brock was also a clever businessman and also made sure to bring Paul Heyman in with him very quickly when he came back.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Vince would never have done of his own accord.
No, true.
Apparently, it was just Brock Lesnar cut a very bad promo quite early into his comeback. He came back to Gorilla. Vince says, what was that? And Brock said, worse the effects of Call My Jew.
Yeah.
And the next week, Paul Heyman came along, and that's where we've had 12... It's crazy to think that, really. 12 continuous years of Paul Heyman in employment in the WWE in various shifting roles and responsibilities.
Yeah.
But he might be the last man standing by the end of all
this. That would be hilarious.
It would be amazing if he ended up being there. Or if it was Paul Heyman versus Brian Gerwitz all over again. But we hadn't yet got that formula of the Brock Lesnar match. We really get that with the SummerSlam match after this with John Cena.
Yeah, we get two German suplexes, I think, in this match.
Yeah, exactly. And they're very low down German suplexes as well, because by this point, I think everyone knew Undertaker's got a few screws loose. We need to be careful. The moment the Undertaker's trying to do old school, you can tell that everyone involved is very worried.
Yeah.
Most of all, possibly the Undertaker.
Now, I think that's why Lesnar cuts him off. He cuts him off twice, and Taker doesn't hit old school in this match.
No, he doesn't, no. But to be fair, I think they probably have that spot in place anyway, and it's like, I think this is one of those problems that it's like, now that we know what a Brock Lesnar match should look like, watching this seems so weird. It is very much Brock Lesnar working that Undertaker style of match, and that's for the first 5 minutes, and then the next 20 minutes, because it goes for 25 minutes. It's Brock Lesnar trying to work an Undertaker match when he's not entirely sure the Undertaker could say his own name, let alone call an Undertaker match.
Do we know the bit where the concussion comes from?
You know the Undertaker sort of targeting Brock Lesnar's shoulder for the first few
bits,
and there's a moment where they go outside, and it is an awkward spot. I don't know what they were trying to do with it, where Lesnar kind of captures one of Undertaker's legs, and Undertaker's hopping, and then he slams him down to the floor, and Undertaker can't really control or protect himself from that fall in the conventional sense, and just the back of his head bumps off of it.
Yeah, I mean, the camera doesn't catch it flush, but was a hell of an impact.
And knowing that when you're watching it, it's like you can say that the story of the match was that the Undertaker was just getting the shit beaten out of him.
Yeah,
they didn't quite pay that off in the story of how it was going. Like, now you make it more epic, and it would be like Undertaker on his feet, pouring at the on his hands and knees, like trying to pull himself up off of Brock Lesnar or something like that. Whereas all that you get in this is like him screwing up a last ride, and when he does the tombstone, he can tell he's not even fully confident, so he's like got him over the shoulder, but usually it's with the legs on either side of his face.
Yeah,
a sort of 69 situation. He doesn't even go that far, but because, you know, this is pre-concussion checks and everything, it was just gutted out. And obviously they would have had to, even if in today's protocol, it would have had to have been hit the F5 and just win it, but there would have had to be a finish. They couldn't have had it like be a stoppage. They should, but they're not going to do that.
Oh, imagine if he'd won by stoppage.
Well, again, your whole thing of like, that went wrong, this can't be right. They knew how to play that up by not playing the music and just wallowing in the moment. That's something WWE were always really good at doing. They seem to know how to time it to get the right level of response from people. Like when I remember it was like when Nakamura was going to make his debut, and I think they like timed that exactly. They knew how long to give Sami Zayn in the ring on his own, absorbing his final time as an NXT regular, and knowing the excitement of what Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be like in NXT. And so they wait for that. And then they turn the lights off. Then they still wait a little bit more until the music starts. And then it's a little bit more till Nakamura comes out. And they've got the brilliant text and everything.
Yeah.
The way that they do this is so clever. They play it up like everyone's shocked. So shocked, even the sound person's like, I don't have the... Because I remember actually WrestleMania 9 was one of those moments where... And I wrote about this in my book, but I think I might have misremembered it slightly. But I do know that my stepdad, observed this. I call him dad, but he's my stepdad. Observed this, that at the end of WrestleMania 9, where Hulk Hogan comes out of nowhere and gets called out for a match and pins Yokozuna in like 20 seconds for the title, Dad was always highly amused that they played his music immediately. Like, surely, how would they know? How would they know? I was like, shut up, you're not my real dad. Anyway.
You can do that. I can't.
Bret Hart had just lost the title. I was fully within my rights.
You'd have been a wreck at that point, thinking about it, yeah.
I was 28 years old, I was. Anyway. No, I've already given away how old I would have been for that.
Yeah.
I love Paul Heyman's reaction, because it's that sense of he's been all like, my man will conquer you. Eat, sleep, conquer, repeat, and all that stuff. But then when the happens, it's like, I didn't mean it. I didn't think you'd really do it. But it does so perfectly sell like everyone's shock. Yeah. Even Heyman, he is in the ring within half a second of the final third count. Like, that's as fast as Paul Heyman's moved in a long time.
He is so good in this match. I mean, like, shocker, Paul Heyman is quite good at what he does, but he is so good at this match. The bit where he's giving Brock a pep talk, he's taking this from you, he's stealing this from you, and he's just screaming at Brock. It's so, so good.
So it's like, should you have done the story of the match be that Brock Lesnar's just too much for Undertaker from the start? Not just the back and forth that we get for most of the match. And then it's like, Brock's taking the majority of the match and the Undertaker's worn out, but it is like, feels like that's more just because he's been concussed rather than that's the story that they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
it feels like there should be more drama. But again, if you do it in that conventional sense,
you telegraph it a little bit.
Yeah, you telegraph it. The whole point is almost that the match kind of has to be only just coasting.
Mm.
And with a crowd that's watching it more out of requirement than they're as invested in it. Like they were, you know, during the... Whatever people think about those matches with Triple H, the crowd was invested in them. The CM Punk match, the crowd was pretty much popping and up and down for that as well throughout it all.
Yeah.
This one, there's a real hush throughout it all. It's like the... And sometimes that will happen with Undertaker matches or like Triple H main events around this time.
His Mark Henry casket match was a prime example of this.
Yeah. At that point, I think I was like, the streak should never end unless you got someone that you know is going to be your top star forever.
Mm.
But even then, you can't be certain. I'm thinking of like... All that time, Kenta Kobashi holds the GHC title. In the end, he loses it to a guy called Takeshi Rikio, who was just one of their young prospects at the time.
Mm.
But it was like, ultimately, that he's like a trivia answer at this point, and you don't want it to be that. And obviously, it wasn't. I mean, you could have done it with Roman Reigns, and they kind of did do it at WrestleMania 32 with Roman Reigns. They did tell that story, but that was when Undertaker was 22-1, not 23-0.
Yeah.
That would have been met with actual fury rather than shock. Because they would have sensed it from that from the start, really, at that point. Because I realised I haven't done my dream WrestleMania match yet, so because we haven't got a guest, it will fit into what I'm going to tell here.
With this, I go into two worlds. I fully accept where you're coming from, is yes, we got Decade of Lesnar as Thanos. There is always an element of me that goes, it could have been someone else. Not now, though, but I go, like, retrospectively. Like, I have it in my head, Orton at WrestleMania 21.
Well, that was the last time I thought this could be broken. The streak hadn't reached mythological status at this point. It had just been a quirk of trivia until WrestleMania 17, where they mention it. And then 18, he does the countdown.
After beating Ric Flair.
Yeah. But even then, they were still like, is it that significant? Because WrestleMania 19, he's in a handicap match because it was supposed to be a tag team match with Nathan Jones. But just Nathan Jones was just so useless that they were like, we've got to make it a handicap match. I couldn't tell.
They took him out on Sunday Night Heat. That was the storyline, wasn't it?
I couldn't tell, actually, from the caskets that they had laid out when they do the opening montage, the opening sequence, if there was one with, was it like Big Show got one and Prince Albert got one, or was it Big Show and A-Train, sorry, that he would have been at that point.
Well, I like the fact, because it's so close to him walking out, that CM Punk has to have a casket.
It's another one of those ones where it was like, oh, foreshadowing, and it's always one of those things where it's like, are we giving WWE too much credit for this?
Foreshadowing what?
Well, the foreshadowing is, he has all those caskets lined up, and then he's got the one for Brock Lesnar, and then he sets it on fire, and is that them saying, there's no need for this casket because I'm going to lose?
No, I don't buy that. I think that's him going, I'm going to send you to hell. Look, there's hell coming from your casket.
Yeah, perhaps.
I don't buy that foreshadowing. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't buy that.
I always feel like WWE, when they want to get something, put something across, they fucking hit you over the head with it.
Exactly.
Repeatedly. So there's not a place for nuance and subtlety.
No commentator mentioned anything quite like that.
The commentators are another example. They just say nothing.
Mm.
And Michael Cole times this really well with the count as well. 1, 2, the streak, 3, is over.
Yeah.
Because all the previous ones, I think by that point it had become a running gag. Streak's over! Streak's over! And then it's kind of like the Vince McMahon, he got him! Oh no, he didn't get him.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, there was a finality to it. And I did realise, because when he hit it, I remember it was the third, because it was like the third F5, and the rule of thumb at that point, although arguably the Randy Savage match at WrestleMania 7, but that was before it was a rule. Because by this point, it was like, as we were saying for the Austin Rock thing, for these matches, it was 3 times you hit the finisher, the third time is always
the charm,
the final time. You can't do it more than 3 times. And so when Brock Lesnar hit it the third time, I was like, okay, he's going to win this match. That's the law of wrestling. So it was like, it didn't shock me when the third slap of the mat hit, insofar as I didn't see it coming. But I was also like, surely they're therefore going to break their rule. Or they've forgotten that rule. And then it happened. And I was like, I don't think this streak should ever be broken, I think was my feeling at that point. Just keep it special.
The moment I thought the streak would never be broken, and it really got cemented for me as like, yep, that's it. They're going to ride this till the bitter end. Is, do you remember the Hell in a Cell match he has with Triple H at WrestleMania? Where he argues with Shawn Michaels. Shawn's switching music's him. into a pedigree and he still kicks out. I'm like, at that point, I don't think I said it out loud, but I remember thinking, well, it's never going to happen then.
Well, I think that maybe was just another pointer towards the way of where a lot of WrestleManias were, because there were future matches where Brock did hit three F5s and
yeah,
at least Roman Reigns kicked out of them.
Mm.
And it was just that epicness and the spam of finishers that we've come to realise, oh, that's how Triple H and Shawn Michaels like their main events, to the point of ridiculousness, as we've said with like some of the NXT main events, the Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's what we realized in hindsight was what it was. It was like they love that these spots so much they have to do them. But yeah, I get where you're coming from. There is no real shock moment in this moment. The crowd doesn't really react to anything until Undertaker hits a choke slam. And even then, when Lesnar hits the other two F5s, it is not like, as you say, Shawn Michaels switching music into Triple H's pedigree or anything like that. There's nothing that gets that kind of response until it ends.
Yeah.
But again, is it like better to do it then, to lull those people into it? Because I'll tell you what, it was around this time as well that the Red Wedding happened in Game of Thrones. And I made that point online, or I read someone make that point and I reiterated it, that this was wrestling's Red Wedding. That just people didn't see it coming until it actually happened. And when it was happening, you couldn't quite comprehend it. But also from those two things, we got the react culture. From that, everyone that watches TV shows and trailers and movies, there are many people making a living off of that on YouTube, of them watching stuff or listening to music or whatever it is for the first time, and people want to watch it. They want to watch other people reacting to it. And to be fair, when I was a kid, I was apparently doing that. Like, if I watch a comedy show with a parent or someone, half the time, especially if I watched it before, I'd be turning to look at them to see their reaction.
Yeah.
The reason the Red Wedding worked was because the people who read the books knew what was going to come. Yeah. So lots of them were surreptitiously filming the friends who were watching the show and hadn't read. So they knew it. And I remember it was like shown on Conan O'Brien, and there were all these montages of it. And then after that, there was like a bar in Brooklyn that filmed everyone watching every episode of Game of Thrones from then on.
Mm.
And ever since, I think this is the match that is the reason that on WWE and AEW, we constantly complain about it. They are looking around for those people in the crowd during the matches for those reactions. And sometimes they try to recreate it. They try to get those moments again, and it never... I guess maybe they did with Roman beating Cody last year at WrestleMania 39. That's probably the biggest shock since then that I can
think
of. Oh, and Daniel Bryan being eliminated for the Royal Rumble, I suppose.
I mean, they had Angry Miz Girl.
That was before this, though, to be fair. Yeah. So they did know. They were already doing it, but it was more just like at the end of the match. I think after this, it was like... I was like, are there any crowd shots during this match? No.
Mm.
But there are dozens of different crowd shots after. So they knew it was coming.
With some of our favourite fans as well. Green shirt guy.
The Brock Lesnar guy.
Who's shocked that his guy won? I always... Not always struggled with that, yeah. But it is a bit jarring.
White jacket guy. I don't even know if that guy still goes to it, but I just remember he was like the one guy who was cheering for John Cena at Money in the Bank against CM Punk. That was the one thing I remember about that guy.
I respect him more than the others then, because he's got the balls to stand up for himself. Or to be contrarian, but either way.
I don't know if respect is the term. I don't think respect is the term for anyone.
What's the opposite
guys.
Of shame? Pride? No, not that. Less shame. Yeah!
Do you get where I'm coming from with that? This is like...
Yeah, yeah.
The WWE's been searching for that ever since, I think, and...
The guy you're referring to, Elias Ember.
Is that the fellow with the big eyes?
The glasses, yeah, him. Him, with the white shirt.
Yeah, because he was there, like... Because he'd, like, met Triple H and had said, like, Triple H had inspired him to lose loads of weight through training and everything, so it was just a funny little coincidence. But yeah, they've been looking for that guy ever since.
Yeah.
And... I don't think they've ever... Have they ever?
It's weird, really.
There was Miz Girl. She was like the John the Baptist of this.
I was going to let that breathe for a split sec.
I did lay it out there to you on a plate, and it was a shock reaction.
Oh, it's layered, and I like it. I like it. It is weird how we sort of seek meme culture, but the very thing about meme culture is you can't control what becomes a meme. Memes, it's like, maybe if you're cool, you don't even need to be told you're cool, you know? It's that quote from The Simpsons.
Yes, but to be fair, there's a lot of people that have gone out trying to make memes and they have succeeded in it. A lot of these memes are very clearly acted out or whatever.
Well, that's just TikTok as well. Ugh.
Well, that's the thing. Trying to recreate a spontaneous moment is so borderline impossible. Like, Cody losing at WrestleMania 39 is the one that's come close. And that's through just years and years of WrestleMania booking and main event booking, pretty much always telling you. Like, WrestleMania 16 similarly had a shock heel win.
Yeah.
I guess 27 sort of had that with The Miz, but that was just, was always about Rock and Cena. That was just part one of a trilogy.
Then there's a man who's the third man in his match.
Through sheer coincidence. Well, not entirely coincidence, because obviously one of the reasons The Undertaker is a star is because he was booked so strongly. And if you're being booked strongly, then you are considerate about whether they lose this or that match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And again, I think it was just a coincidence that come 13, I think was the first time they acknowledged it. It was like, oh, here's a funny little fact for you. Because I think it's like, it says it all, that like The Undertaker is someone that they've always wanted, they cared about, they've invested in, they want to protect. They see him as a strong option just in legacy. And so he doesn't lose at WrestleMania to the point that they can make a thing out of it as time goes on, because he also just has that longevity because he got into the job pretty young. He worked it perfectly. He was able to keep up with the times and change his thing, but they had this one constant throughout it. And that was the beautiful thing about the streak, that it covered so many different eras and times in wrestling. I think that's maybe my big disappointment with this, is that because he was like Shawn Michaels, Triple H, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, I guess Punk would be the only example of him dealing with another generation of wrestlers.
Yeah.
Whereas like, he has those matches with Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns afterwards, but it is like, it's not with the streak involved, so it's like he misses out on them being part of this narrative.
Despite, like I say, this period being my golden era of wrestling WWE engagement.
But do you think it's the golden era and like it's the best stuff you've watched, or is it just the golden era in this when you had the most spare time?
Most spare time, and like I say, the monthly pay-per-views surround, like when you're watching it in a crowd of people that are all into it, it is different for me. But I remember the WrestleMania 31 match, and my friend James just going to me, do you care at all about this match? I'm like, no, I don't. I feel nothing for this Undertaker match. Like, I felt nothing. And I was getting into the dirt sheets by then, even more so, and the internet rumour mill, and I knew that Bray had sprained his ankle in the week prior. So I'm like, part of my brain was, it's not even going to be good. That's an example of my brain, of me going too far into it and going, wow, going in with like such a Nelly negative mindset towards a match that it was doomed to fail in my eyes. Do you know what I mean?
He never had another good WrestleMania match, like out and out good WrestleMania match after Punk at 29.
The Boneyard match.
Is that a match? In the conventional sense.
Look, I feel we have to say it is, in case he wants to try and come back and do a proper match one more time.
Well, he said he was literally going to do it a couple of weeks ago, and then like a day later he was like, no, I'm not going
to
do it.
He's struggling to fill the void.
He's turning up at football games. But it's like, no, don't. Because like I said, I think it was clear at this point, he was already slower. He was already, like, really, it was starting to affect him. And that concussion didn't help matters. He had all the whiz-boom special effects with the Triple H matches.
Yeah.
And the CM Punk match was good, but it never hit those great heights.
How much of that was Punk, though?
Somewhat, yes. But, but my point is that would still be one that would be, like, in the... If someone rated that match over 4 stars... I would understand their minds. If they went up to like the 4.75 area, I'd be kind of like, you're clearly not straight edge, but I wouldn't begrudge someone saying that was one of Undertaker, like if you were going to do a compilation of Undertaker WrestleMania matches. If this hadn't had the finish it had, if it had simply been Undertaker hitting the third tombstone or the second tombstone, then this match would be definitely bottom half of the table. It wouldn't be there with the Giant Gonzalez's, but it wouldn't be much better than like the Mark Henry match.
It'd be like the Jake the Snake Robert tier, just like, oh, that happened.
Well, that was what I was going to say with the chapters. If you look at the Undertaker streak, it accidentally has like a chapter structure. First two WrestleManias, he beats the legends of previous eras. He beats Jimmy Snuka and Jake the Snake Roberts. Then it's like the monster era, the Giants era. WrestleMania 9, Giant Gonzalez. Again, like, they didn't have a streak in mind at that point because they wouldn't have then booked the Undertaker just win by DQ.
Yeah.
You know, and they've always got to edit around that to make it look like it was an all-conquering victory for him with that one. And also just because it's Giant Gonzalez, you got to edit around that too. So 9, it's Gonzalez. 11, it's King Kong Bundy. 12, it's Diesel. Then after that, it was him in sort of the mix of the main event as like a regular part of the roster, not a special attraction. But you also got the Psycho Sid part of it as the monsters as well. And you can argue with Kane as well with the monster side of it too. But like the big boss man, Triple H, Ric Flair. And that's then when you get to start the narrative of, I want to beat Wrestle the Undertaker at WrestleMania because I want to break the streak. Which was really the story kind of from Randy Orton onwards. And like you say, the Randy Orton one was when I would have gone in. I would have gone like, I think it's 50-50 odds it was going to be Randy Orton that won that match because it's so fitting with his legend killer gimmick as well.
Yeah.
And he just turned heel after the failed run as a face at the top of the... Like, that was not the WrestleMania 21 match they had in mind for Randy Orton when they were going to that event. Was that the first match that really had the whole sense of the RKO out of nowhere narrative of him doing it out of a chokeslam?
Yeah, that feud sort of cemented Randy as a permanent main eventer.
Like, he was still trying to not be a permanent main eventer for what he was doing outside of the ring.
Well, yeah, true. You have his like his fake-faced dad interfering at SummerSlam. You have like the reaction shot of the casket catching fire. You have all sorts. Him at Survivor Series absolutely crapping himself after winning when The Undertaker comes back.
And also there was that block where it was fitted in with the belt. And then you had the Shawn Michaels Triple H saga for 4 years, and then you got Punk and Lesnar. That was his, like, it was almost like the, you know, the Paul Heyman thing, like how it used to be managers throwing their guys at Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Like Heenan throwing John Studd and then King Kong Bundy, Paul Orndorff, then Andre the Giant at him. This was like Paul Heyman, plan A didn't work, but plan B. The problem was that Brock Lesnar had kind of already conquered The Undertaker, just not at WrestleMania. Though there's very few wrestlers that The Undertaker put over as thoroughly as he did Brock Lesnar. Arguably Stone Cold Steve Austin, but like, Undertaker has never really been manhandled in a way that meant something like he was by Brock Lesnar in their No Mercy 2002 Hell in a Cell match.
Oh, it's such a bloodbath, isn't it?
Yeah, the blood that, like, there's a moment I always remember from that match, which is The Undertaker hitting the last ride, actually being able to hit it, unlike in this match, where they did a very good edit on that filming that made it look almost like he'd hit. He meant to do that. But in this one, it's like he hits that, and he's on top of Brock Lesnar, and he's bleeding so much that the bleed pours onto Brock Lesnar's, maybe his mouth, but it's definitely dribbling off of his chin. And that was also the thing as well, because I knew it was the finish as well, because they recreated that finish from No Mercy in this match. But it looked even more impressive back then because, and it is insane what Brock Lesnar, it's just one of those moments where you're like, this man is barely human.
Yeah.
Because that he can take The Undertaker for his size on his shoulder, throw him up in the air and just catch him onto the shoulders in a different way, and then in one fluid motion turn it into an F5.
So good, isn't he?
If you could have recreated that match just without the Hell in a Cell confines, if that whole match had happened and it was WrestleMania 21, because Brock Lesnar stuck around for another year and won, or that was the WrestleMania 20 match instead of Undertaker against Kane, and Brock Lesnar then, after he'd done it, just taking the belt and then just climbing to the top of the cell and just holding the belt and standing above a bleeding, battered Undertaker.
Yeah.
So that was also another problem. Like, it felt like no, The Undertaker hadn't put anyone as over as bad, as well as he did. Obviously, he'd done those sort of things for, like, the Great Khali, but that didn't have the staying power. Or Giant Gonzalez, you know, but that didn't have the staying power. And he lost to Steve Austin, like, more times than I think. Like, if anyone truly has a better win-loss record over The Undertaker than Steve Austin, it could only be Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And so, again, it didn't feel that special. So it also almost felt like, oh, well, Brock Lesnar probably won't win this because he has to return the favour to The Undertaker. And again, so much of this is Brock Lesnar being used to put over other people. And it's like he's a good one for the streak, but that's about it. Because, again, we didn't think that the Brock Lesnar that he became after this wasn't the Brock Lesnar we thought. We wanted him to be that Brock Lesnar from beating the shit out of John Cena. Instead, we had to wait 2 years of, I guess, Brock Lesnar having to pass the loyalty test with Vince. And that means putting over John Cena. That means putting over Triple H at WrestleMania. But then we'll have you win the series over Triple H 2-1. And then we'll have you beat CM Punk. And now we'll have you beat The Undertaker. And they milked it. They got 10 years out of him.
Oh, they got great mileage.
Yeah. So in hindsight, with the 10 years of retrospective, this was worth it. Because Brock Lesnar was able to have those main events and have that aura for those 10 years that The Undertaker had before then.
Mm.
So in the long term, I was wrong that night when I said he shouldn't have done it. But that's still not going to change my choice for a dream WrestleMania. But we'll get to that. Again, just the match is so dull. It's partly because they just tried to do like a big man match, but it's a methodical match, and then The Undertaker gets concussed. Brock Lesnar can't work that super fast hyperstar because he doesn't fully know it himself yet. He'd sort of done that with the John Cena, but they had the limitations because it wasn't like no holds barred or anything. The match is nothing. You never need to rewatch the match. Just watch the last 30 seconds and all the reactions. Well, you don't even need to work from there. You don't have to rewind. Maybe watch the entrance, because it's a cool entrance, but The Undertaker always does cool entrances.
Yeah. Go forward and see what Lesnar became. You say loyalty test, and you are right. It's sort of also like an incubation period. That's sort of like the gestation period before we get this Lesnar. You just got to get through it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we get this Lesnar then with the John Cena match, because John Cena can bump all over the place. I mean, it's fascinating to wonder, because it was John Cena, that double whammy of breaking the Undertaker streak and then dominating John Cena in a fashion that no one else had done. Instead it had been breaking the Undertaker streak and then just probably squashing Daniel Bryan, which would have been the original plan. But like, I don't think they would have given Daniel Bryan as much back from John Cena. But on the other hand, Daniel Bryan is such a super worker, and when he did get to have his way with the match that they did have, it's one of Brock Lesnar's best matches ever.
So good. Daniel Bryan is so good in that match.
But that was like shit-eating grin, newly heel-turned Daniel Bryan, whereas this would have been yes, yes, no, no. And I think as it was obvious that Vince wanted him to just...
die.
Essentially die. Like, if he knew it was an option, like it was an option for them to do it with Kofi Kingston whenever they did that down the line, he might have tried to book it like that, because the Brock Lesnar Goldberg match, that was where we started to go with Brock Lesnar after that. You know, when he puts Drew McIntyre over, it's like 4 minutes. When he puts Seth Rollins over, that's also like 6-7 minutes. And then a year on from here, we get the Roman Reigns thing and the heist of the century. That's a whole other conversation for another time. But, you know, from this, we get the Brock Lesnar that like just eliminates almost everyone that comes up to him. Like I said, he's the Thanos of the WWE, even before there was a term for that. At that point, we were still thinking, I'm not sure about this Thanos bloke that's going to turn up in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I'm not sure about this. This is going to work at all. Maybe they watched Brock Lesnar and was like, that's where we've got to go. So yeah, in that moment, like you say, there was that shock in the moment. Were you like me, though, thinking, that's wrong, they should never have broken the streak?
I felt that way for a long time. I made my peace with it, again, being in that emotionally attached period that I was in WWE at that time. And in hindsight, yeah, the mileage was there in Brock. And you're right in what you're saying, that they did get a lot out of it. There is an element of me that still thinks, though, it could have been Randy Orton at 21. It could have been Edge when Edge had the chance.
Randy Orton's the only one in that run that I can say, if they'd have pulled the trigger there, I wouldn't have in that moment said that's a bad idea. Other than, like, Randy Orton was obviously still at this point unreliable.
Yeah.
But it's like, as I said, the streak didn't have that aura yet. Like, 13-1's not as...
Not the same. It's not quite
the same. But it would have done the job. But it would have done the job for what you wanted Randy Orton to be, which was the legend killer.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I was like, that's a great gimmick. And that's, you know, string to that bow.
Mm. But look, the Edge thing's just my personal preference. I loved Edge in that period of time. That's just me being selfish. Do you know what I mean? It's not me being logical.
If you were to be asked, what's your favourite Undertaker WrestleMania match? What would you say? I'm guessing it's Shawn Michaels 25. It's like the default answer.
Both of those are really, really good. I liked both of those. I did like the CM Punk one. I liked the Randy Orton one. I liked the Edge one. Those are my, to quote, paraphrase Booker T when he was a commentator, those are my fave five in no particular order.
Really? Not the Batista one? Because that was the one that like everyone, it seemed like even management was shocked at how good that was.
Mm. That is really good. I don't think I've seen that one in a long time, so that's more poor memory.
The one that has the fond memories for me is the Kane at WrestleMania 14 match. As me and Novelist were saying, like, in my mind, that was one of the best matches I'd ever seen at that point. Mm.
I've not seen that. I've only seen the second one.
I don't know if I've ever watched the second. I must have.
It's not that
good. It all blurs together after a while. Is it the biggest win anyone's ever had? Because surely this means more than any world title win, really. And as I said, Brock Lesnar carried an aura then for the rest of that time. He'll always have that. That will be like the number one. Genuinely, it might be even above him winning the UFC heavyweight title. And I know it's different things, different horse for course and athletic accomplishment against whatever.
It'll have made him more money.
Yeah. And obviously, famously, Undertaker wanted to do it whilst he was in the UFC. And did you watch that? I remember watching that because it was after he'd lost the heavyweight title, I think, to Cain Velasquez.
Yeah.
And The Undertaker was there because he was, you know, such a huge UFC mark. And obviously, we had to have that little bit of both of them trading those MMA submission holds, you know. It's fascinating that Undertaker obviously kind of wishes if it had been a viable option back in the early 90s. It seems like he would have rather have done that than be a wrestler.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But then maybe, like Brock Lesnar, he would have realised, oh, I don't actually like it when people are trying to hit me for real.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Although that would have been fascinating, The Undertaker in the heavyweight division in the early 90s UFC world and everything.
Oh, early 90s UFC. Yeah,
Undertaker against Hoist Gracie in a no-weight division.
He'd have died. He'd have died.
Who? Which one? I'm not sure which one you're going with there.
Taker. Hoist Gracie would have beat Taker.
I don't know. Like, there's beating Dan Severn and Chemo, and then there's beating... If Undertaker had a knowledge of martial arts, and, you know, he would have only been, like, what, 27, 20, 29, 30 at that point?
There's having a knowledge of martial arts, and there's having a knowledge of martial arts to beat Hoist Gracie.
Well, yeah, but the only reason Hoist was able to win any of those matches was everyone was behind him at that point. When he fought Matt Hughes dismantled him.
Yeah.
When he fought Sakuraba, Sakuraba dismantled him. Undertaker has a few physical advantages over Sakuraba and Matt Hughes, is what I'm saying.
No, true.
It's one of those moments, like, I think everyone will always, if you watched it live, you'll always remember where you were. You'll always remember what your reaction was.
Oh, I definitely will. I don't think that'll ever escape me.
It's probably because of those things that, like, late last year, are able to show a montage of YouTube characters filming themselves reacting to CM Punk's music starting up at Survivor Series. That came from this moment, I think. And unfortunately, it led to an annoyance for the rest of our lives of crowd shots during matches.
You take the bad with the good, don't you? You gotta take the rough with the smooth.
I've said it a few times, like Meltzer says, you can have the best match you like. If the finish is flat, that is probably what people will remember most of all.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the other end of the side. You can have as flat a match as you like. If the finish is something that no one will forget,
then you're set.
This is maybe the most memorable finish of a wrestling match ever. Maybe. Or at least in the modern context.
Oh, definitely.
Shall we run down the rest of this card quickly? Like I said, WrestleMania 30, watched it live. And, you know, what we knew it for was the Daniel Bryan thing. And we're kind of having that now again with, like, the fans' reactions and... It's fascinating as well, isn't it? Because that was like a six-month narrative on WWE TV that they were leaning into kind of both intentionally and unintentionally. Because if Vince had had his way, it would have been Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus at this event.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at it now with WrestleMania 40, it's like it took him a week and it's like, okay, pivot.
Yeah, we've got to go now.
And they've made it. They've made it work. Again, it's another one of those things of how things have changed but also sort of stayed the same. But they are learning. Very slowly.
So the pre-show is a Fatal 4-Way Elimination Tag Team match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. The Usos defeat Los Matadores, Real Americans, and Rybacksel. The main card starts with Daniel Bryan defeating Triple H to get added to the World Heavyweight Championship match later that night. We then get a 6-man tag team match between The Shield and Kane and the New Age Outlaws.
Oh, now, like you told me a few years before this, oh yeah, the New Age Outlaws, they're going to be featured prominently at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I would have probably been like, I know I should be shocked at that, but part of me isn't. I know not to ever be shocked anymore.
We then have the, I think it's the first ever Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, where Cesaro wins.
Eliminating the Big Show?
Yes. Following that match, it's John Cena defeating Bray Wyatt in the first of, oh, why did John have to win this one's of WrestleManias for quite some time? Then this match, which is then followed by the Vicky Guerrero Invitational match, where AJ Lee defeats Oksana, Alicia Fox, Brie Bella, Cameron, Emma, Eva Marie, Layla, Naomi, Natalia, Nikki Bella, Rosa Mendes, Summer Rae, and Tamina Snuka.
Well, it says it all that, doesn't it, really?
And then the main event, Daniel Bryan defeats Batista and Randy Orton to win the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
I'm usually not one of those people, but I guess it was 3 a.m. or whatever. I was tired and I was angry and just, you know, we'd just been moaning for most of the show because that's what we do. Part of me thought, you know why I think Vince has booked Brock Lesnar to win this match? In the hopes that the crowd is so deflated they don't react to Daniel Bryan winning the match. Like, that was my conspiracy mind in that moment thought. I know it's probably not, or maybe it's not even on a conscious level, but maybe on a subconscious level. Vince has done this to try and sabotage.
Yeah.
Any other major memories of this? Obviously, we got the Daniel Bryan moments, and I don't think... Is that the height of nerdery for wrestling until AEW becomes what it becomes? Like I said, when Daniel Bryan came to WWE, I thought, I think he'll have a good run, but... I remember when he was on NXT, and obviously he was treated like shit on that. But Vince, I think, always had a weird relationship with Daniel Bryan. Because he treated him like shit, but he always kept him prominent.
Yeah.
And in the year that they were building up The Miz to be a WrestleMania main eventer, they still booked Daniel Bryan to beat him twice.
Yeah.
When Daniel Bryan got sacked because of the tie incident, is that apparently like the only time Vince McMahon like called the person personally to tell them that. And obviously brought him back only a few months later. So there's always been a strange thing with him and Daniel Bryan. I don't know what it is. And we got it throughout all of this build up as well. But for me, it was such like a vindication as well. Because like Simon saw a photo of Bryan Danielson or Daniel Bryan with long shaggy hair, a big scraggly beard, wearing a plaid red shirt. And it was like, well, I wonder why you like him so much. If I had a shred of athletic ability or tolerance for pain, maybe part of me thinks if I could be a wrestler, he's the wrestler I wish I could be. Like, I could see myself in there, like the idealized version of myself. Kind of like how there's a guy who was in the... he was Zac Efron's partner in... Is it Dave and Mike Need Wedding Dates or something like that? You know what I'm talking about if you saw him.
If I saw him, yeah, but no.
Comedic actor. He was in this show called Workaholics, which was never really a big hit.
I just don't know his name.
He's in Modern Family as, like, one of whatever's longtime boyfriends. I always saw him as, like, he's had the peak career I could have had if I'd gone, like, from improv, gone to Hollywood or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, he's the height I could have reached because he's literally either one day older than me or one day younger than me.
Okay.
So, yeah, Daniel Bryan's my wrestling ideal, I suppose, and that guy's my acting ideal. I don't know if I've got a writing ideal yet. We'll see over time. Hopefully I'm my writing ideal. Any other thoughts for you? Like, did Daniel Bryan mean as much to you, or were you kind of... Because you didn't know, like...
Oh, yeah.
But you hadn't grown up on, like, the Ring of Honor Bryan Danielson or anything like I had, but you were loving the yes chance.
I'd seen a lot of false starts in WWE, and this guy still has it. And at the time, I'm like, okay, well, this guy is really, really good. It's just really annoying that they're not seeing this.
But they did see it. But they didn't see it. But they did see it.
Yeah.
They had him win Money in the Bank. They had him win the world title. They gave him the yes gimmick. Vince literally told him that was his gimmick. And Daniel Bryan didn't even realize that that was his gimmick until Vince pointed it out to him.
Yeah.
Because he was doing it as a Diego Sanchez thing. That's the whole thing, though, isn't it? As we were saying, like, it was funny when I kind of summed it up to a friend. It was like, before you come to the WWF, you call Jake the Snake because you're a slippery customer. You're untrustworthy. You have that lithe body. You come to WWF, you're carrying a snake to the ring.
Boom. Don't complicate things.
Yeah, Bryan Danielson, you're a great technical wrestler who has a fearless attitude. You know nonsense, but you also have that inherent cockiness to you because you have that level of self-belief. This one, sometimes you grow your hair out because you can't be asked to shave, but sometimes you also do shave.
Yeah.
With this, it's just grow your hair out, look as weird as possible because you're kind of funny looking, and just say one word over and over again. And you know what? It got him more over than any 5-star match against Nigel. Like, if he was just having 5-star matches against Nigel McGuinness, he does a main event WrestleMania in front of 75,000 people.
Yeah.
And we can love the McGuinness stuff, but that's not what gets you there. What gets you there is saying one word over and over and over again.
Genius. It is genius.
But yeah, like I said, I remember him on that NXT video saying, I have these goals and I will reach my final ultimate ambition of main eventing WrestleMania. And I was like, you will never. I know not. Even then, I was like, don't say never. But I was like, I've struggled to see a world where you main event WrestleMania. And he fucking did it.
Oh, yeah. madness, really, but in a good way. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I bet you're glad to be proven wrong.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to be wrong, but I just was like, I hope I'm wrong. It's one of those situations, like when CM Punk entered the UFC, I was like, I don't see any way that you are successful. I hope I'm wrong, but not I was not wrong then. And at times, maybe I was hoping that I was right, maybe, as well, at some points, too.
Mm.
Or in retrospect, I'm happy I was right. Again, like how in retrospect, I'm happy I was wrong in this one. But to get to my dream WrestleMania match, it's kind of appropriate because I am going to do it with WrestleMania 30. And boy, am I going to screw up the higgledy-piggledy of the booking, because my dream match is going to take place instead of Brock Lesnar against The Undertaker. But because I do want that moment, or something as close to that moment, I'll stick that on WrestleMania 31 instead. But I'm not going to rebook WrestleMania 31. But I am going to rebook WrestleMania 30, because the one Undertaker streak match that I wanted that we never got was Undertaker against John Cena with the streak on the line. Because you want to say people were biting Randy Orton winning it, or people were biting Triple H or Shawn Michaels breaking it, or particularly Triple H at 27 and 28. When John Cena would do his five-knuckle shuffle to The Undertaker in that match, some people would be convinced at that moment that he was going to win the match.
Yeah.
The near falls, the bites, the close bites you would have got, you would have had the crowd losing their minds throughout.
And you would have had a much better version than the one we did get.
Exactly. That's another reason why I wanted it, because it's shot like Hulk Hogan would never have had that match happen to him.
Mm.
Stone Cold Steve Austin would never have had that match happen to him. I don't know if John Cena being willing to have that match is a good or a bad sign. And all, the only other thing I remember of that match is him getting a boot and it missing him by about 7 yards.
It's so bad, isn't it? So bad.
That is not requiring a VAR check. So, but what are my knock-on effects for that? So what am I doing with John Cena if he's not wrestling Bray Wyatt? What am I doing with Brock Lesnar if he's not facing The Undertaker? Well, I'm not booking Brock versus Bray. What I am booking instead is the Brock Lesnar dream match that we never got. I'm shocked they never booked this. Well, we got it, but we got it before one of them was even called by the name he was called. I'm going to take Batista out of the WrestleMania main event mix, and I'm going to give us the Brock Lesnar-Batista match that we never, ever got, other than Brock Lesnar versus Leviathan in OVW.
Okay.
And also, I always thought that Daniel Bryan's story didn't need Batista being added to that mix. I felt bad for Batista for getting Bautista'd. Everyone already knew. Everyone was saying I was saying Bautista, and then it became a thing. Like,
yeah.
A Simpsons joke became a chant, amazed me, and then got turned into Bautista.
Well, I think he took the power back there.
I think Batista's one of those very sensitive people. Because that's what makes him the best actor out of all of them. But I think he was genuinely upset. Like, I'm not wearing skinny jeans. Shut up. So I'm getting Batista versus Brock Lesnar now. What am I doing with Bray Wyatt? Because I'm saying, have Daniel Bryan beat Triple H at the main event and then have him beat Randy Orton at the end. That fits the narrative anyway. And that means Bryan gets the win over Randy Orton. I always hate it when the champ loses the belt and is not involved in the fall. I didn't like that it was Batista tapping out, Randy Orton on the outside, not able to get in time. But I do like Daniel Bryan getting to beat both Triple H and Randy Orton at the start and the end of the event. And it would have been a better match, because triple threat matches nearly always are not as good as what would have been just a one-on-one match between two of the people involved. So what am I doing with Bray Wyatt? Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing with Bray Wyatt. I'm sticking him in a rematch of one of our favourite ever matches that had happened the pay-per-view before this. It's an elimination rematch. It's the Shield against the Wyatt family. And that's like some sort of anything goes brawl. As close as WWE in 2014 would come to giving a stadium stampede is what I would have made that Shield Wyatt family match. Have it completely different scope and style and setting than what we got from Elimination Chamber. And Kane and the New Age Outlaws, now you can stick them in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal if you like.
Yeah, if you want.
If you want to do that.
I think that match goes less than like 6 minutes.
Less than 3 minutes. I've got it just here. It goes 2:56. And that just feels like a waste of the Shield. I also remember, because obviously then they do the run with Evolution, which you can still do off of that.
Yeah.
You could book it one way or the other. I would have probably booked it the Shield, get their win back. Doesn't really matter. You just have fucking Dean Ambrose pin Eric Rowan. It's not important in that regards. And then you move on to the Evolution story from there, if you want to. Although I would have had Batista as the babyface, but you can easily have him turn heel. the next night.
Now the chaos man in me.
Have Brock Lesnar beat Batista in that dream match so Brock Lesnar's kept strong for the Undertaker match at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
And Batista in his rage then attacks Daniel Bryan at the Raw after and the Shield save him. And that's where you get your run off into that storyline. And I just want to see John Cena hit an AA on the Undertaker at WrestleMania. And every man-child in that crowd start crying before The Undertaker kicks out.
They could have had John break it in real life, couldn't they? That easily could have happened.
That's why I can't believe they never did it.
Mm.
I think kind of covered everything we could have covered.
Yeah.
I mean, if we'd have had a guest on for this one, who the fuck knows how long this would have gone on for?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Did you go to the WrestleManias you went to live? Did you go to one of the ones in New Orleans?
No. Dallas, Texas.
Because I will say, like, I've always said if I go to America for WrestleMania, or if Canada or wherever it ended up being, I'd want to make it like a week and just the WrestleMania is a part of it and all the fan access and everything. I don't even know how much I'd bother with that. But I would want it to be a place that's interesting. And definitely, if it was in New Orleans, that's a place I want to visit.
That's one of my dream destinations for the States. So
just find out exactly what this gumbo is that they talk about.
I'll be in the jambalaya for me all day long. Oh, I love jambalaya.
Well, the guest that we were going to have, I know he went to one of the WrestleManias at New Orleans. I don't know if it was 30 or was it 35? That was the other one that was there. Doesn't matter. It's really not important. But yeah, again, if it's a place that interests me, that's one of, like, if I knew that WrestleMania 43 or whatever was going to be in New Orleans, I think I would probably see how I could make it work for me to go to. I'm not that interested in Minnesota, put it that way. But anyway, I think that's everything covered, isn't it, Simon?
It is, yeah. We've really got into the weeds on this one, but again,
we're probably the one that we talked the least about the match. But
look, and if you're going to judge us for that, watch the match first, then you'll understand our point of view.
But anyway, Simon, if people want to give you criticisms for other ways that you can't see the wood for the trees as to what you're supposed to be giving people as advertised and take you up with the Trade Descriptions Act, how can they do so?
People can get in touch with me on Twitter. I'm sending a Simon Cross free. Free for the number of F5s it took to pin The Undertaker.
My name's Lorcan Mullen. That's LorcanMullen for the A, N in an ending is an ending. That's my Twitter handle, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd. If you're putting at gmail.com at the end of it, that's my email address. Get in touch with the show at lmtyspod@gmail.com. LMTYSPod is also our Twitter and Facebook handles. For the next episode, we are closing off the self-contained trilogy of women's matches in wrestling, and fingers crossed we will have a guest on that can actually talk from more of a personal reaction to that is actually worth listening to, as we have on the comedian and head of the Wrestle Club table, Sakiza. But there's nothing left to say at this point, except that my name's Lorcan Mullen.
My name's Simon Cross.
Thank you for letting us tell you something, and I hope you'll stay with us as we come towards the final straight of March Madness.